couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Amsterdam, Terrifier 2, Werewolf by Night, Hellraiser, and Significant Other. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring The Visitor. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The news of last weekend was it was a surprise hit for Smile at the box office. Not that it won. I mean, it's not that a horror movie doing well, especially in today's environment. Right now, horror movies are doing really, really well. But Smile really overperformed. They were expecting less than $20 million for this movie. It made $22.6 million. And to think they were originally thinking about just dropping this onto Paramount Plus, but it did very well in sort of preview ideas. And so they said, hey, let's put it out there in the theaters, because it's kind of a song and dance about whether or not to put something in the theaters because it's more expensive and you got to deal with marketing. But they felt it was strong enough. And right now we're actually having a great time for horror movies. So somebody like me, who's a horror movie fan, you know, there's always options for horror, especially if you talk about some independent horror, some stuff that's kind of a little bit lower under the radar, not the full mainstream horror. And I'm going to be talking about a couple of those this week, but there's always options in the independent world for some unique horror. But in the mainstream horror world, we're having some really great stuff. And not only do you have Smile, but you had Barbarian, which is a fantastic movie. You had stuff like The Black Phone earlier this year. That's a really good movie. There's a lot of great horror movies that are out right now. And yeah, you get some of them that, I mean, I've not seen The Invitation, but I hear it's a little bit derivative and predictable. But there's some really neat and innovative stuff that's going on in the multiplex right now. So Smile coming in at number one at $22.6 million. It does not surprise me, but it also it bodes well for horror movies. And look, it's that first weekend of October, so yeah, you're going to be having a lot of this in the next couple weeks. It'll burn out. Winds will change soon, but right now I'm having a good time. And number two was Don't Worry, Darling, with $6.8 million. And that just barely squeaked above the third, being Woman King, with $6.8 million. I mean, you're talking about less than $100,000 separating these two. And The Woman King came out a week before Don't Worry, Darling. So it's showing how quickly Don't Worry, Darling is losing steam and how well The Woman King is holding. And of course, you had the Avatar re-release in number four with $5 million. But the one that kind of caught a lot of people's eyes was Bros. It kind of bombed with less than $5 million. It made $4.8 and change. And they were expecting $8 to $10 million for this. So even their tracking was off on this. It was one thing for a movie to not do that well, but realize that's what they expected it to make. You know, even something like In the Heights last year, which was a big flop, they kind of saw that that was where the numbers were going. They just didn't publicize it beforehand. But yeah, I mean, Bros made less than half of what they were kind of predicting for this. And Billy Eichner, who of course starred in it and co-wrote the script, he lashed out at audiences, calling them homophobic for not going to the movie. And Dot Marie Jones, who's also in the movie, who most people would recognize her as Coach Beast from Glee, she lashed out as well. And you know, I can't say the quote because it has profanity in it, but you know, she sort of lashed out at audiences for not going. Look, Billy Eichner freaking out over something, I guess I can give him a pass on that, because that's kind of what his entire shtick is, overreacting and freaking out at people. But here's the thing. Speaking as somebody who has not seen the movie, because I was not afforded a chance to see the movie. It wasn't screened, and I was busy last weekend, so I didn't get a chance to go see it. I've just seen the trailers for it. And I gotta say, when you look at the trailers, there's nothing in those trailers that's really appealing to the mainstream audiences. The trailers are extremely weighted into LGBT issues. The whole concept of making a romantic comedy that's just like any other romantic comedy, it just happens to have two gay guys in it, does not wash for the way they marketed this movie. It feels like it's a big gay movie because every single joke in the trailers is about it being a gay movie. Not just that they happen to be gay, but it's very aggressively gay. And you don't end up getting the mainstream audience with something like that. It's the same thing, you know, like a Spike Lee movie from the 90s, which were very much directed at a black audience. Or, you know, although polar opposite of sort of the style, you take Tyler Perry's movies are very much made for the Christian black audience, in particular females. You're not reaching outside of that demographic with the way they market a Tyler Perry movie. And the same thing with this. On top of it, this was a very raunchy movie. It was an R-rated rom-com. And generally, R-rated rom-coms, they have a place, and they've become a thing, but they've really only become a thing since the 90s, you know, since There's Something About Mary, and then you had Judd Apatow involved in doing stuff. But generally, rom-coms are PG-13, very vanilla sex. You know, even the straight sex is very vanilla in these movies. And in this movie, it was, I think it was a little much for people. And also on top of it, again, I've not seen the movie. I'm sure it's got a lot of sweet moments and wonderful character moments. You just don't get any of that in the marketing. And on top of that, all that, there's no real names to put. There's no Reese Witherspoon in this. There's, you know, it's not even like they took like a well-known name. Like, they didn't take Harry Styles and put him in this movie. It's people who are kind of unknown anyways. And so there's a lot of reasons why people didn't go see this movie. Also, it's not a movie that's like screaming, hey, come see me now, immediately. Whereas like Spider-Man, that Far From Home, everyone wanted to see that to avoid spoilers. I can probably predict everything that happens in this movie because it's following a rom-com formula. So lashing out at your audience and insulting them is not actually going to expand the audience. And all it does is it's a bad look. And, you know, like I said, it's on brand for Billy Eichner. But this is unfortunate because I think they put a lot of eggs in one basket. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Emancipation, which is coming to limited theaters on December 2nd and on Apple TV Plus on December 9th.
We must get to Lincoln's army. 5 days through this swamp. There are many ways to die in a swamp. There are many ways to die here. I will not be afraid. What can a mere man do to me?
Follow the sound of Lincoln's cannons.
The thing that's interesting about this movie is it stars Will Smith, and it's his first release after the slap at the Oscars. Now, it's directed by Antoine Fuqua, and I think it was actually shot long before the Oscars. But this is an award film, and a lot of people are saying, well, you know, are people even going to consider this for Will Smith? Because he's banned from the Oscars for 10 years. And also, regardless of what happened, he was not going to win an Oscar for this. There's only been two people in the history of the world who've won two back-to-back Oscars, and that was Spencer Tracy in the 30s and Tom Hanks in the 90s. The next one I want to talk about is Violent Night, which comes out in theaters on December 2nd.
You have $300 million in your personal vault. That's what I want for Christmas.
I don't want any trouble, okay?
Someone's gonna scooch up that chimney.
Who is he?
Because he's not your typical mall Santa.
Santa? Are you going to help us, Santa?
Yeah, Trudy.
Santa?
No, my nice list.
Santa Claus is coming to town. Time for some season's beatings.
It is another violent Santa Claus movie. You remember, it was last year, the year before, they did Fat Man with Mel Gibson, which was a, you know, violent Santa Claus movie. This is another one. It looks good. I mean, David Harbour is the perfect actor to play something like this. So this looks like it's going to be a lot of fun, but definitely, you know, don't take the kiddies to this one. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'll be talking about Werewolf at Night and Terrifier 2. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the reviews and talk about something. It's not a movie, it's a special. It's a special presentation. Werewolf by Night. A group of monster hunters get together to see who will earn their place as the leader while one monster hides among them.
This Halloween, you can't escape the shock, the terror of Werewolf by Night.
Tonight, it is every hunter for themselves. But one of you is a monster, masquerading as one of our own. I can't wait to find out what breed of evil you are.
This is from Marvel Studios. Now, if for most normal people out there, not geeks like me, I was aware of the Werewolf by Night comic book, but it was a fringe comic book. It's a werewolf comic. I mean, Marvel was originally Atlas Comics in the 50s, and Atlas Comics did a lot of horror content. They weren't as big as EC, but they were a well-known thing. Then Marvel was known for superheroes, but they did do a werewolf series. And this is not done as a full series. It's a one, like, 50-minute special. And what's really cool about it is that the opening, and even if you watch the full trailer, it opens up with this Marvel presentation, and it reminds me of those ABC Sunday night movies opening that they would do on TV when really it was a big deal to have a movie show up on TV, in the prime time. So Werewolf by Night also plays into the 1940s style of werewolf movies, which is, Werewolf of London, I think, was in the 30s. But of course, the Wolfman movies were in the 40s. And while it's not Universal, and so they're not completely mimicking Universal, they do have some elements, like it's in black and white, and they do some music elements. They put cigarette burns into the image. And it's a pretty simple story. It's a sort of a one-shot story. It takes, about 50 minutes. So it's not a full movie, but it's, I think, one of these things that Marvel's going to start doing is these, it's essentially like a special issue, it's a special episode of something to introduce another character. And they do kind of violate the whole make it look like an old movie type thing with digital effects. And they have digital blood splattering on the screen. And that's an effect that it's cheesy and it doesn't look good, I think. So I have some issues with that. But overall, it was fun to watch. I really did enjoy the fun one-off. We're just going to make an episode and enjoy ourselves with it. And I appreciate that. I love the fact that Disney and Marvel is doing more diverse stuff. And by diverse, I'm not talking about like racial or ethnic diversity. I'm talking about diversity of stories. Not everything's about a billionaire with a supersuit. I mean, this is a movie about a werewolf. And it also has some other Marvel characters that, people who've read the comics will recognize and think it's really cool. I mean, I had that spoiled for me. That's one of the things, speaking of spoilers, it's very difficult to be in my position and review stuff without spoiling things. And the same thing happened on She-Hulk this week. They have a character in there who was teased earlier in the series, but the episode dropped at like 3 a.m, and by 8 a.m, there were articles about this character and all this stuff about him. I'm like, give people at least even 24 hours to watch a show. So unfortunately, you have to avoid spoilers and these kind of things. But yeah, Werewolf by Night, even with what I knew was a spoiler, and like it's only a spoiler for somebody who's a geek and knows who some of these characters are. But yeah, it was fun. I hope they do more of this. I love the fact that they've got stuff like Moon Knight and Werewolf by Night. Some of these things that would have just made people lose their mind back in 2010 after Iron Man. Ultimately, this special, it's more effective diversification by Marvel with some nice action and a clever throwback to the 1940s horror movies. I'm going to say Werewolf by Night totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Terrifier 2. I was talking about these independent, smaller horror movies. This is one of them. It's sort of like a middling one because the character in here, Art the Clown, has found his way into horror culture because he's such an effective looking character. But this isn't in its essence. It's a small little fringe horror movie. In Terrifier 2, a sadistic murdering clown is resurrected to stalk a young woman and her friends on Halloween.
So, did you figure out what you're dressing up as tomorrow?
He wants to dress up as a real guy who murdered 9 people last year.
Oh, you're not doing that.
You think that guy's still out there?
What's up with you and this clown all of a sudden? You're like obsessed.
They never found his body. What if he decides to come back here?
He was covered in blood on his shirt and his hands when he got here.
Speaking of surprises, kids, we have a very special guest with us today. All the way from Miles County, please welcome Art the Clown.
The best part of Terrifier, or Terrifier 2, is Art the Clown. Art the Clown is this black and white, stylized clown that's silent. And even if you've not seen the Terrifier movies, you might recognize him because he's very effective as a scary-looking clown. It's one of these things that the director has stumbled upon. Because I have to say, the director and writer he's not that great. It's Damien Leone, and he started out doing short films with this character of Art the Clown. And it's an effective-looking character. It's a great image. And then he did a movie called All Hallows Eve, which is an anthology horror movie, and I love anthology horror movies. And I saw that, but it wasn't very good. But they had Art the Clown show up in him, and he looks great in it. And then they spun off one of the stories in that into its own movie, Terrifier, which is known for being very graphic and brutal in terms of Art killing people. And now they do Terrifier 2. And finally, they've gotten some writing down that's decent. I thought the writing in Terrifier 1 was really loose and not great. It's just, again, the imagery is what makes these movies work. With Terrifier 2, they settle into a more or less standard slasher-type plot, where you've got this girl, I'm assuming she's either teenage age, you know, maybe high school, early college, and she's got a younger brother and a mother, and her father's no longer with them, and they're being stalked by this clown, this Art the Clown character, who has miraculously come back to life from the last movie. I mean, the last movie, he was definitively dead. But he's come back to life because, you know, death never stops the great slasher heroes. You know, Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, Michael Myers, they ignore death and they get around it in many ways. One of the things that does hobble this movie a bit is it is 2 hours and 20 minutes. And that's a bit long. Let me tell you, I will say this. For a 2 hour, 20 minute horror movie slasher independent thriller, it didn't feel like a labor. It just felt like they crammed a lot in there because there was such poor writing, I think, in the first Terrifier that they kind of had to build some structure to kind of continue this character. And so they give a background and then they have to give the background of these characters and they have to, you know, set other things up. So they've got a lot of setup that's crammed into this movie. And now the ending does take a little bit long, but that's kind of where all the action is. So it could have been trimmed a bit, but it still works. And like I said, for an independent horror movie, usually a 2.5 hour movie would just be brutal. But this one actually works. As a slasher film, it's fine. It is at times a little overly brutal for me. So if you don't like blood and guts and gore and violence, you're going to want to sit this one out. But, you know, it's entirely relying on the visually arresting Art the Clown. The story is more coherent than the previous efforts. And it does run a bit long to find its footing, but it's sending the Terrifier franchise in the right direction, at least. I'm going to have to say that Terrifier 2 kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we've got Amsterdam and Significant Other. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the reviews and talk about the one that's not a horror movie. I'm so loaded up with the horror movies now. And I love it. I love October. I love the horror movies. And the reason I'm so flush with horror movies is it's not just what's in the theaters. There's a ton of stuff on streaming. And one of the things they're doing with streaming is they're loading it up with new horror and horror-adjacent features. But for right now, let's go. But we also forget that this time of year is the beginning of award season. And let's talk about Amsterdam. David O. Russell directs this ensemble dark comedy about three friends who meet during World War I, fighting to escape a murder charge years later in New York City. New York City!
So, two soldiers and a nurse found ourselves in
Amsterdam.
We formed a pact, and we swore to protect each other, no matter what.
Life is funny.
We need someone to help us
to find the truth.
My friend was killed because of something monstrous that he had seen.
This is all turning out to be a lot larger than any of us.
First of all, I'm not a big fan of David O. Russell. This stuff's hit or miss. I mean, I thought American Hustle was okay. I did not like Silver Linings Playbook at all. So his stuff is real hit or miss for me. And I know right now he's kind of embroiled in the controversy for how he treated Amy Adams during American Hustle. There's a lot of talk and discussion about his abusive behavior and that. I really haven't followed that. I just cover the movies that come out. And this film wants to be something more than it is. It's a very simple story. Really, when you look at it, you break it down, it's an incredibly simple story. And it's almost like David O. Russell didn't like the fact that it was that simple and just decided to complicate things. It jumps around in time unnecessarily. I mean, it's one thing to do a flashback, but the whole purpose of the flashback seems really weak and light, and then the flashback lasts way longer than it should. It's one of those movies, as it starts playing, I'm about 30 minutes in, and I'm like, what the heck is this movie about? And I start thinking in my head, I'm like, okay, this happened, then this happened, then this. Okay, I didn't miss anything. It just, I don't know where it's going. Yes, sir, there's this murder that's happened, and they're trying to clear their names and figure out who did it and figure out why. And the murder escalates and bigger things happen, but it's that simple, but it just gets very convoluted. And there's some fantastic performances, and boy, the cast is amazing. I mean, you've got Christian Bale, who, of course, he's his own problem to work with sometimes, but Christian Bale does a great job as one of the people. He's a doctor who gets injured in World War I. And you got John David Washington, he's okay. He's kind of the weak link in terms of the leads. He's not a compelling actor, and he usually works in a very soft-spoken sort of stay in the background. That's why he worked well in like a movie like Tenet. But he's in it, and he plays a lawyer who the soldier has gone on to be a lawyer. You got Margot Robbie as a nurse that they knew in World War I, and they're all like these friends who are going to stick together at all the times, and they are working on solving this murder. But then you've got all this supporting cast. You got like people like Chris Rock in there. You got Robert De Niro shows up. Taylor Swift, who, I mean, not that she was a great actress, but she shows up in this movie. You've got Zoe Saldana playing a role, and I mean, you got Rami Malek and Anna Taylor-Joy. I mean, you got a lot of great names and a lot of good performances. Even like Mike Myers shows up. He comes back to the big screen for this. And it kind of, it's this weird part that reminds you of the part he played in Inglourious Basterds. So this is a very well-acted movie, and some great people behind it. It's got great set design and great production design. It's too bad you can't see any of it because it's underlit, which is the trend nowadays, is to underlight everything and then shoot everything so it all comes out as one color. You know, if they're in one room, everything turns out that it's browns or they're in grays. It almost looks black and white at times. And I guess that's a trend, but it looks like garbage. It looks like a faded photograph. And I don't want to look at a faded photograph. That's nice for a scene, but not for a whole freaking movie. Anyways, the story just, it has a really good message. It has a really good thing that it's trying to say at the end, and it's relevant. And I mean, it's like supposedly marginally based on, I mean, loosely based on the true events, but I'm sure there's tons of dramatic license. But the fact that it's based on true events, or sort of based on true events, so it has this good part in the third act, actually works. It's just getting there. It's convoluted. And you think back and you're like, God, a lot of stuff happened to say not a whole lot of stuff. So I don't know. I mean, this excellent cast can't overcome the convoluted script. That has a good message, but lacks real focus. I'm going to say Amsterdam sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Significant Other. A couple goes on a camping trip in the woods only to discover there is something else out there putting them in danger.
Before I knew you, I didn't really know what I wanted in life. And then I met you and I feel like I'm going somewhere. And I don't even know where, but I just know I want to go there with you.
You ready to tell us what happened to you? Were you alone?
I said I don't remember.
I think something's really wrong with her.
What I'm trying to say is, you're my person.
This is a horror film on Paramount Plus, and it's one of those sort of independent style horror movies. It stars Micah Monroe, and pretty much if she's in a movie that has a low budget, you can assume it's a pretty decent movie, and she gives a pretty decent performance. If she's in a movie that has anything more than a $15 or $20 million budget, it's going to be garbage. Because generally when she's in a, she's like the Parker Posey of today. Remember back in the day, Parker Posey, if she was in an independent film, it was usually great. And then if she ended up in a big movie like Josie and the Pussycats or Superman Returns, it's pretty sure it's going to be a clunker. But Michael Monroe does a good job. It's her and Jake Lacy as this couple, and they go out in the woods, and she's nervous about it. She's got some anxiety, mental issues that she's dealing with, and she's got a whole bunch of baggage from her parents have been divorced. And it's the two of them going on a romantic hiking and camping trip. But the thing opens, and there's something that lands in the woods. So you know something's out there. And I'm talking around it because the less you know about it, the better. And then weird things start to happen. And it has a bunch of these really well-executed twists and turns where you don't quite know where it's going and you don't quite know what it's doing. And at times it does play into some tropes that I don't particularly like that get a little bit too cheeky for my tastes. But overall, it has this series of reveals and background and has some surprises to it. And although there's elements that are derivative from other horror and science fiction type movies, it's sort of like Barbarian, where it took a bunch of things that you've seen in other movies and put them together, but put it together in such a unique way that it doesn't feel like it's being a retread of ideas or concepts. It's a very small cast because they're out in the woods. And there have been several movies that have come out recently that are these very small, intimate, just tiny little cast of just a handful of people. And those are the kind of things that you could shoot in COVID. Now, this one, they're shooting out in the middle of the woods, which makes it even more COVID-friendly, I guess you could say, because it's in the open air. And this works because the limitations that are thrust upon you in certain filmmaking situations can cause problems for comedies and dramas and action movies, but sometimes the limitations are what makes something golden in a horror movie, and that's what works in this one. I did enjoy this one. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it. I thought it was going to be a little more run-of-the-mill, but basically there's a couple twists and turns that I didn't see coming immediately, and if you can do that to me as somebody who's seen a lot of these movies, I'm impressed because you aren't just doing something that somebody's done a million times before thinking you're clever. Like, you know, oh, I made it. It's all a dream. And you're like, everybody does It's All a Dream. That's not a new thing. And I've literally seen people talk about their film saying, oh, I put this clever thing in, and it's some nonsense that everybody puts in their movie. So this was effectively done. So I'm going to have to say, the less you know, the better. But this is a clever spin on isolated horror. It rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we've got a review of Hellraiser and then the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The Visitor. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the main movies with the review of Hellraiser. This reboot of the visceral Clive Barker masterpiece focuses on a recovering addict who opens a mysterious puzzle box which unleashes torturous monsters on the people in her life.
What is it?
It's a puzzle.
And it's almost finished.
So if I solve it, do I get a prize?
I do.
It has 6 configurations. It opens up and it cuts you. And then they come to collect.
Greater delights await. We wish to see you proceed.
For first of all, the funniest thing, and generally Hellraiser is not funny, but the funniest thing that happened to me in regards to this movie is because Disney owns Hulu. I mean, they've got a controlling stake in Hulu, but it's really more that Fox thing. But the way my job works is if I got to request it, I got to go through Disney to get it. So I request it from my rep, and then it comes in the email, and I get this email. It's like, Disney, Walt Disney has sent you a link to Hellraiser. And I'm like, I never thought in a million years I would get a Disney branded version of Hellraiser. But that, I mean, that's actually not the first time. If you go back, you know, maybe about 15 years when Miramax was just churning out output, Miramax and Dimension, the Hellraiser franchise was under them too. So technically Disney's had the Hellraiser franchise for decades. But I was a huge fan of the original Hellraiser movies. I saw them in the theaters, and I've grown to appreciate the original more over the years because of its simplicity and its unnerving horror and its nihilism. It's fascinating to watch. And they got all this stuff, like they got all, in the movie, in the original movie, when they're finding the Cenobites coming through, they're just like knocking over religious iconography. I mean, they don't care. It has no effect on them. In this movie, it's very dark, and there is no good savior for you, you know, that sort of thing. And that's what's just weirdly compelling about it, very unnerving about the original Hellraiser movie. And then the sequel, I love the sequel because it kind of really goes off the walls. And what's neat about this movie is it draws from both of them. It's not a remake. It's because, you know, it's not this thing about somebody who finds it in the house and then this creature grows up and needs to feed off of other people to regenerate his body. That's not what's going on. It's not the same story at all, but it does play around with it. Almost could be the same universe. It's just this is happening now, and if Pinhead is a different type, but maybe this is just another Pinhead. Who's to say there's only one Pinhead floating around the Cenobite world? And it's effectively done, and it plays around with stuff like it has these subtexts of addiction and how you inadvertently harm those you love. And those are the ones, because they're the ones closest to you. Those are the ones that are shouldering the brunt of your sins, so to speak. And that's this theme that's going on in the movie. So it has these really well-placed and well-woven in ideas, but it's different. And that's the thing that's so great. They just didn't redo the original, and they play into a greater mythos of Hellraiser. And you got that with the second movie, Hellbound, back in whatever, 1988 or whenever that came out. And that movie, it had the characters interacting with some very big concepts. You know, it took them into the Cenobites realm. And here you don't go into the Cenobites realm, but you're right on the edge of it. And you can sort of see what's going on. And you know there's a much greater world out there and much greater world in there. And it's terrifying to wonder what's going on in there. So there's some real neat stuff in this film. Still, the original one that Clive Barker put together, which really had his fingerprints all over. If you've ever looked at some of Clive Barker's drawings or read any of his books, it's this felt, that uncomfortableness that Clive Barker can evoke. This one's a little more polished, to the point that even the Cenobites, as disturbing as they are, they're still not as effective as the original ones. And I'm not exactly sure why. It might be some digital elements, or it might just be the design that's not as bloody. I mean, it's let's just say it's more fleshy, but it's not as scalding. When you look at a Cenobite in the original movie and you can feel the pain. And I don't necessarily think that's happening here. It's just it's a little more uncomfortable. But still, this is probably the third best Hellraiser movie out there. You got the first one that's great, and the second one that's great, and this one's pretty good. So I'd be happy to see, you know, a new one of these every Halloween. That would be great. And just keep it up in terms of a sign of quality. So I'm going to have to say, you know, while it's not as visceral and hard-hitting as the original, or its much maligned sequel, this attempt to reboot the franchise hits the mark and doesn't pull its punches. I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on a film called The Visitor. It's on VOD and on demand right now. It's going to be on Epix in December because it's an Epix original movie. It's done by Blumhouse as well. In the story, a married couple moves to the wife's hometown in the South, and her husband makes some eerie discoveries about their new home.
Robert, I know you're new to these parts, but I speak for everyone when I say you already feel like one of us.
That's not for sale.
I was just hoping you might be able to give me some more information about it.
You think you want answers? You're wrong.
You know, I just found another painting of him.
You don't actually think that's you.
There seems to be a theme, and part of this is because there have been so many horror movies made. I mean, we've had 100 years plus of cinema. There's been a lot of horror movies made. And there's more accessible horror movies made for the independent filmmaker, so there's even more good concepts used. So it's very hard to do something that's not been done before. It's very hard to not retread familiar ground. And one of the things that I've said and that I've championed movies like Barbarian or even Significant Other, which I was talking about earlier, is there are films that use a lot of these concepts and you can find these concepts used many other places, but the unique way they put them together provides you with a different take on the horror movie. The thing with The Visitor is it forgets to put them together in a way that doesn't make it feel like something else. The Visitor is a very effective movie. I mean, it's got some really interesting pacing. It doesn't run too long. It's like an hour and a half. It's got some decent cinematography, although it does have that low-lit potential that you see in everything now. And there are some neat imagery. There's the story's actually pretty decent. But the problem is, I've seen a lot of this before. I've seen all this before. And I don't want to tell you, again, I don't want to tell you the movies that it reminds me of because that's kind of a spoiler alert. But the movie itself is a spoiler because things are happening. And as I'm watching, I'm thinking, oh, I know where this is going. I've seen this movie before. You know, the movie is well made and it's well acted and it has some creepy stuff. But again, it just feels like it's a familiar road. And it's not like there's certain types of movies you can take down a familiar road. And even if you know everything that's going to happen, you can enjoy the journey. A rom-com, you know, talk about rom-coms when we're talking about Bros. A standard formulaic PG-13 rom-com, they're all the same. They're all the same story. There's nothing new. And whenever they've tried to change the formula, it usually is a disaster. Slasher movies, same thing. I can sit there and watch all the Friday the 13th movies and enjoy every single one of them, even though there's very few surprises in any of them. There's a couple. But, you know, but whereas something like Halloween, part of the reason why the Halloween franchise goes so off the rails is because they do try to do different things with it. And it just doesn't work. Sometimes, you know, it's okay to play the hits. And this one does that. But it's really not that kind of a genre. This relies on you not being able to guess what's going to happen next. And you're way ahead of the main characters in figuring out this movie. It's not surprising. That's his biggest sin. It's predictable when it shouldn't be. Because predictability is fine. It just not always. And here it doesn't quite work. You know, while effectively made, this movie retreads common tropes that leave the viewer with few, if any, surprises. So even though it's got some good elements to it, I'm going to have to say that The Visitor does kind of suck.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
And that's it for the show. We got to wrap up here. Next week, we're going to be coming in with Halloween Ends, the, well, yeah, not really, final ending of the Halloween franchise. And then that's it. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.